Welcome back to the hall. I'd like to tell you a little story. Well, not so little, but a story about somewhat autobiographical of my journey on the path, and to share with you some of the lessons I've learned in practice. So as I mentioned to my group, I've been practicing almost 50 years. I started when I was about your age, which now makes me 68 years old. My father passed away when he was 69, and I thought that was old age. I thought that was incredibly elderly. And here I sit in front of all of you and with you, experiencing being that age and looking at my life from that lens. And the quality of being an elder in this community is a tremendous offering from both the perspective of what I've learned and also in seeing the possibility of the transmission of the practice that we've been involved in. My practice in this tradition started with the opening of IMS almost 40 years ago when I found my spiritual home here in terms of practice. So that's the backdrop in which the story will be told. But first, I'd like you to take a moment. Where are you? Are you here? Are you listening? Are you sleeping? Are you restless? Are you asleep? Check in for a moment as my words and my process, a story unfold for you, and just see where you are. Also, I'd like to engage with you, if interested, that if I say something that's not clear or something that you'd like more information about, just raise your hand and I'll be happy to engage the process with you so that we can learn together. With that said, I'd like to set the tone for the talk, which hopefully will have a lot to do about practice and about kindness. Let the rain come and wash away the ancient grudges, the bitter hatreds, held and nurtured over generations. Let the rain wash away the memory of the hurt, the neglect. Then let the sun come out and fill the sky with rainbows. Let the warmth of the sun heal us whenever we are broken. Let it burn away the fog so that we can see each other clearly. So that we can see beyond labels, beyond accents, gender, or skin color. Let the warmth and brightness of the sun melt our selfishness so that we can share the joys and feel the sorrows of our neighbors. And let the light of the sun be so strong that we will all see people as our neighbors. Let the earth, nourished by rain, bring forth flowers to surround us with beauty. And let the mountains teach our hearts to reach upward to heaven. So I'd like now to sort of begin the story and share with you some of the writings. Actually, at the encouragement of my son, I actually started a blog called Insights with Eddie. And it was encouraged by him because he had requested and his friends had requested. These are kids that grew up in the neighborhood where I live who were very interested in practicing meditation and wanted to get together and have me share with them the practice and see what that could, whether it was helpful to them. And so we got together, 11 of his friends, these were 30-year-olds, and we sat and I said, what were they doing there? And they said, well, their minds were a mess and they really had no control and no ability to find peace and quiet in their minds and some level of stillness. And so we sat and they were encouraged and I was encouraged. And we tried it again, and a few came. And then it was impossible to bring them back together, and it was not my responsibility to do that. And when my son says, well, why don't you reach out in a way that connects with them? And he said that every time we have a conversation about teachings, he shares it with his friends, and they all are inspired and want more. So the blog was an attempt to reach out in a way that these friends of his could accept and integrate into their own lives. So that was the motivation behind it. So I'll give you a little of the background. That was a little of the background, and now a little of the content. For almost 50 years, I've been involved with an inner search to discover by direct experience the true meaning of life. Along the way, I've attained a sense of peace, a quieter mind, more love and kindness. The goal of this blog is to share my journey and teachings in the hopes that they will help others find their way to greater happiness and a life lived at ease. So that was the intro about the content or the context of the blog. And now I'm going to share with you a little bit of the writing of where I've come from and what I've done. I'd like to begin with a quote from the Dalai Lama about the sort of the purpose or the intention of this talk, which has to do with kindness. The true essence of humankind is kindness. There are other qualities which come from education or knowledge, but it is essential if one wishes to be a genuine human being and impart satisfying meaning to one's existence to have a good heart. So all of this is about a good heart, love, compassion, and kindness for ourselves and each other. So the story continues. Once upon a time, there was a boy from the Bronx, which is where I grew up, who ventured out, leaving his neighborhood behind. He found a world full of wonder, joy, and later pain, sorrow, and suffering. Always doing well, with things coming easy, he never wondered what was all this was about. A high school full of fun and games, and in college, all seemed to fit a plan. At college, along the way, he met a young woman of culture beyond his years. Her mantra to the boy was, "There's someone in there. Please take a look." Not happening, one day she picked up and walked out, leaving the young man bewildered. Unbeknownst to the young man at the time, this was the defining moment, the start of a journey to lands emotional and spiritual, yet unseen. So this is the formative period in terms of my own learning. That was when I was about 21, so we're talking almost 50 years ago, that I found this interest and this yearning to find more about life than I had encountered in my growing up. It started with a question: who am I? And what is this all about, anyway? This began my quest for spiritual understanding and fulfillment. Unfortunately, my family life, schooling, and religious background never incorporated such investigation as I grew up. Playing basketball and other urban sports on the playground was not a place for inward investigation. At that moment, I was lost. Sometimes in spiritual circles, this is referred to an experience of the dark night of the soul, a possible entry point in the light of spiritual awakening and understanding. Not an easy place to hang out, but that is how it began for me. One difficult day after another, searching for meaning and understanding in a world not inclined to focus on such questions. So how does one figure it out and learn to express it for the benefit of one and all? So this was my challenge at that age, young age at that time, of trying to find my way in a world that was not conducive to sharing and talking and exposing me to these issues. And what happened is I began meeting others, a sangha of people like yourselves, whose also interest was in spiritual unfolding. And that really was the support of moving my intention along and my first exposure to meditation almost 50 years ago. So I'll give you a little more. This is a quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi. It's part of the teachings of the Noble Eightfold Path, called the Way to End Suffering. The search for a spiritual path is born out of suffering. It does not start with lights and ecstasy, but with the hard tax of pain, disappointment, and confusion. However, for suffering to give birth to genuine spiritual search, it must amount to more than something passively received from without. It has to trigger an inner realization, a perception that pierces through the facile complacency of our usual encounter with the world to glimpse the insecurity perpetually gaping underfoot. When this insight dawns, even if only momentarily, it can precipitate a profound personal crisis. It overturns accustomed goals and values, mocks our routine preoccupations, leaves old enjoyments stubbornly unsatisfactory. So the nature of, for me, of the path is to understand what it is that we are not seeing correctly and what it is about our understanding of the world that does not resonate with the true nature of the world that we experience. My practice now is related to what is referred as the first step on the Noble Path, or the first of the Eight Noble Path, which is a series of investigations and explorations that is the release from suffering, called Right View. So you can think about or contemplate how and what you perceive of the world that is in front of you, that we experience each day and the moments. And when we're talking to you about, you know, checking in, what is it about the world that is true? And my path has led me to explore the meaning of right view, sometimes called right understanding. That is to directly experience and deeply connect with what truly is in this very moment. And in this way, come to understand our interconnectedness with all beings. As described in the teachings, there are three essential attributes of correct understanding. First is impermanence, or the nature of change, that all things arise and fall away. Just think about that in your own life. Everything arises and falls away. There's nothing permanent. Yet we take the world we're in as permanent. So this understanding gives us a new appreciation for the nature of our mind in particular, and into the world we live in. Think about it in the context that if everything is changing, what that means, particularly in terms of our minds and the power that our minds have over us, the thoughts that we have, and the impact that these thoughts have on the story of our lives, being either in the past or in the future. The practice here is to be in the present, and to see that the mind doesn't have power over us, but is actually an integral part of our spiritual understanding. Next, in these three attributes, is dukkha, which can be interpreted as suffering. That it's about the insubstantial nature of all things, that suffering comes from the unsatisfactory and insubstantial nature of the things that we understand and appreciate and participate in each day. The true happiness doesn't come from having more of this or that, but comes from an understanding of this idea of right view. And maybe the hardest or most interesting for me is anatta, which is no self, about the human form, that there's really no one at home. So these elements of the worldview that we have, for me, have been undermined and transformed by working with these concepts and these realities. Change, suffering, and no self. Change. All conditioned things arise and fall away. Suffering, unsatisfactory nature of all conditioned things, and no self. The unsubstantial nature of reality. Plainly said, our worldview is not reflective of the true nature. So we live in a reality that doesn't reflect the true nature, or our minds have created a reality that doesn't reflect on the true nature of our time, of our experience of the world. To me, that's a fundamental transformation of my understanding and relationship to being alive and being human. So it requires an entirely new view and relationship to what we collectively participate in and call our reality. So you ask, what could be so important about these three characteristics? Change, suffering, anatta, and no self. Well, I suggest that they are prerequisite and must be directly experienced and understood in order for human beings to be able to solve the ancient, what I call curse or riddle, put somehow upon us that human behavior is driven by greed, hatred, and delusion. These are very powerful emotions and states of mind that we're here to explore and try and understand so that we can change our perspective about the nature of reality and to each share in that story together. I went to the dictionary and looked up greed. An overwhelming desire to have more of something, such as money, power, than is actually needed. Greed. With greed comes desire, attachment, and wrong view. I want it, I need it, and once I have it, I can't let it go. And only if I have it, I will be happy. What ensues is not happiness, but suffering. Hatred, a feeling of intense dislike, anger, hostility, or animosity. Along with this emotion comes the dislike of something or someone that doesn't meet with our idea of how things should be. You attach to those you like and push away those you don't. More suffering. You have a thought so-and-so is a so-and-so. Instead of recognizing that thought has arisen and watch it fall away, the monkey in the mind immediately jumps in and creates a story filled with unreality and a past and a future that have no substance in experience of the present moment. Suffering again finds its way into our life. Delusion, a false or mistaken belief or idea about something. And just when you think that all of this has a permanent home in the form of a you, an ego, poof. Actually, one finds that there is no one that is at home, that is doing all of this suffering. It is only this illusion that sustains what we think we experience as our reality. Greed, hatred, and delusion. The forms that have overwhelmed humanity and have created an enormous amount of suffering in our lives and others' lives. And the hope that our practice is a way to transform that into being what the Dalai Lama calls a force for good, which I'm going to read a little quote from. This is a brand new book called A Force for Good. It's the Dalai Lama's vision for our world, and it was written by a dear friend of IMS's and mine, Danny Goleman, who's best known for his work on emotional intelligence. And it's an extraordinary book. And so I'm just in the introduction. The Dalai Lama writes the introduction and says in it, "As a human being, I acknowledge that my well-being depends on others, and caring for others' well-being is a moral responsibility I take seriously. It's unrealistic to think that the future of humanity can be achieved on the basis of prayer or good wishes alone. What we need is to take action." This is the extraordinary thing about the book. "Therefore, my first commitment is to contribute to human happiness as best I can. Please keep in mind that as human beings, equipped with marvelous intelligence and the potential for developing a warm heart, each and every one of us can become a force for good." Also relevant to the teachings of the Dalai Lama and my own practice, so this continues from the blog, which is that my practice today is simple, like the Dalai Lama's, and this is a quote. "This is my simple religion. There is no need for temples, no need for complicated philosophy. Our own brain, our own heart is our temple. The philosophy is kindness." So again, these are all interconnected in terms of this concept of a force for good, that kindness and an open heart with compassion can balance the insight of the mindfulness practice into creating a whole, a loving unit of individuals who can transform this planet. My practice today is simple. Kindness, being kind toward oneself, others, and all beings is the foundation for love, wisdom, and compassion. After almost 50 years of sitting, walking, standing meditation, this simple act is worth all the years of practice. So how do we become kind? The circle swings back to those original questions. Who am I? And what is all this about? It requires an entirely new view and relation to what we call reality. And that's what I just shared with you in terms of the nature of reality being impermanence, suffering, and no self. So now I'd like to share some good news with you, which is, I was explaining to some of you and my group today, and Chaz's and others are aware of it. I work in a high school, 9 to 12 grades in Newton, called Newton North High School. There were two high schools, one Newton South, one Newton North. We were talking in our group. Newton North has about 1,900 kids in it. It's the most expensive high school facility ever built in Massachusetts, and probably the third most expensive. It was $197 million, okay? So to give you some context of where these kids go to school. So my sister-in-law, who had been a superintendent in Oakland, California, came to the school, and she said, these kids have no idea what they're living in. This is like a college campus. So it's an extraordinary place. There are a lot of very wonderful components to it. But it's still filled with young people like yourselves, having to take MCAS and now the PARC and SATs and all the other pressures that come along with it. So we had a Chris Willard, who's written a book called Child's Mind, came and spoke on one of our mindfulness days at the school, which I'm going to talk about. And I think it's really revealing and helpful to see what's going on in a world that you inhabit, or the possibilities. In 2014, the American Psychological Association did a large-scale survey of stress in American life. The results found that the most stressed group in America is the American teenager, which I'm sure you could have told me. What's interesting is he provided a diagram showing where the stress points are, and there are three overlapping circles. One's called good grades, the other's a decent amount of sleep, and the third is good social life. And when you have a diagram like that, you intersect them, and you can pick two out of three, but you can never have all of them. So it's impossible to have all three. And the stresses that come with trying to manage that are significant. And as said, probably the most stressed community of people. So with that in mind, the school, I should give a little context. Two years ago, there were three suicides in the Newton community. And the community was devastated that how was this possible, particularly in an affluent community like Newton, where it's dedicated to education, that these kids slipped through the cracks and found this to be the only option that they had. And the community rebounded in an extraordinary way in terms of asking that question and really trying to look in themselves and figure out what was going on. And one of the things that has happened, in some ways through my influence, is that the school system now is engaged. The school committee has an agenda about bringing mindfulness programs and emotional intelligence programs into the school system. And we're finding a number of initiatives, and I'm working with the Student Services Department. We found many, many instances of teachers doing work in their classrooms to bring mindfulness into the school system. The most extraordinary for me was Be Kind Day. And this was by two math teachers who taught advanced math to freshmen and sophomores in the high school. And what they decided to do was have a day full of kindness activities. And I have a few pieces from it. I think you'll be interested in what's being done. I just want to share with you, I think what's unique about Newton is that not only does it have an initiative from the student teacher side, the principals and the administration, but for 5 years now, I've introduced a series of mindfulness programs. And actually, one of the words you heard in the metta was antidote. And I had the audacious chutzpah to call our first talk, Mindfulness, the Antidote to Human Suffering. And Joseph Goldstein was our first talker. And if you know Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's probably the grandfather of the secular mindfulness movement, was also a friend of IMS, and Lama Suryadas and Mirabai Bush, all friends of IMS, were the first four speakers. And we've had 5 years of fall and spring programs. There have been 60 speakers. And we've had a community of probably 3,000 or 4,000 adults in the Newton community who have come to these programs. So I feel like there's not only support within the school system, but there's also a culture in the community of adults who understand and appreciate what the possibilities are for a mindfulness approach. The beauty of what these two teachers have done is they actually shared with us when we did this program that by introducing 5 or 10 minutes of kindness each morning, they were able to finish their math curricula 3 weeks early. It was pretty extraordinary because we're always looking for data points about how to explain the possibilities. And it was when they said that, it was just extraordinary that that was possible. That with just a few minutes of mindfulness, kindness, conversation, they were able to do their work much more efficiently. And the teachers were inspired because the main thing that came out is they said by doing this inside the school system, they feel better about being there and about teaching. So let me just read you about the campaign. Given the pressure and stress that so many of our students are feeling, we feel the need to take time to remind them of the power of kindness. During the holidays, we had our students write kind notes to staff members and each other and assemble kindness kits to take home. On Valentine's Day, our students made 100 special kindness kits for adults living at a senior housing project. The kits were favors at their Valentine's dinner. We also assembled, with the help of a few students, 400 kindness kits designed for the rising eighth graders. We distributed them during eighth grade parent night while also talking to the students about a kindness movement. The students were charged with their first kindness challenge. They were given a blank note card with a kind quote on the front and asked to write a note of appreciation, thanks, kindness to a member of their middle school community. Our biggest kindness kit delivery happened night before April vacation. Our students wrote notes and assigned very special kindness kits for over 500 members of the police and fire departments in both Newton and Watertown. The kits have been a huge success, and we can't wait to branch out to more, spread more kindness wherever we can. Choose kindness. So this was the theme. This was the backdrop for what they were trying to do. And here's the reality, which is this was the poster that was created. It says, Partnerships in Kind presents Be Kind Day. And this series, these were a series of puppies. They had one of the programs was pet therapy. And they brought in some dogs. So one, the first talk was leading a life of happiness. Each teacher selected what they wanted their kids to participate in, and they signed them up. The auditorium seats about 600 kids. Every period, the auditorium is full. There were 500 kids in every one of these programs from the school. Managing stress with mindfulness, the benefits of kindness, they had the people therapy through pets. We had a student faculty panel that I ran, and we had two students tell 150 other students of their practice. It was just extraordinary. And then the IB Meet people ran Creating Compassion for Ourselves and Our Community. So it was quite a day. And I'm just going to one final piece from that. This was a commitment. It says, we the people of Newton North High School community, in order to form a more kind union, establish compassion, assure empathy for one another, provide for meaningful social connections, promote the general well-being, and secure the blessings of kindness to ourselves and others, do ordain and establish this contract of kindness for the Newton community education community. They signed, there was a wall about the size of the back, there were 1,000 signatures on it that day. It changed the whole feel in the school of 1,900 kids, that many kids would participate. It was just an extraordinary event. So it's possible. That's all I'm sharing with you, that this can be taken into the worlds that you live in, and that these ideas about impermanence and change are all, you know, maybe they'll settle and maybe you'll be one or two pieces of the puzzle that you might remember from the talks and the teachings that we've offered you. But these are the reality of transformation and the possibility. Usually in my final go-around in the circle, you know, my sense of the world is that, you know, the verdict is still out on whether human beings can make it on this planet, you know. But this gives us tremendous hope, seeing you all practicing with us, that there really is a future for this planet and for human beings, and that this practice and that all of us being here together can really open that dimension and open that worldview for us, so that our kids and their kids can engage in a process of loving kindness and compassion. So I have a couple pieces to end with. I love this piece from Rumi, who was a 13th century mystic. It's called, "Not Christian or Jew, Muslim nor Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi or Zen, not any religion or cultural system. I am not from the East nor the West, not out of the ocean or up from the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all. I do not exist. I am not an entity in this world or the next, did not descend from Adam or Eve, or any origin story. My place is placeless, a trace of traceless, neither body or soul. I belong to the beloved, have seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to and know, first, last, outer, inner. Only that breath, breathing, human being." And just an appreciation, I found this the other day in my folder. It was the closing workshop that we had last year in our group. And what we do is we take a piece of paper, and everybody in the group gets one, and we pass it around. Everybody writes something, hopefully nice and supportive and encouraging, about who it is. But this was written for me, and I just want to share it with you, because it's I just want you to share what we receive as well. "You are always so insightful, warm, and constantly ask the right questions. I see you as the father figure for all of this retreat. I really have appreciated your consistent compassion and ability to always be present. You are really a great teacher. I really loved how you bring in humor into the group and try to make us all comfortable. Thank you so much for your teachings and comments. I'm glad to have met you. Throughout the years, your wisdom has helped me greatly. The teachings you and the other instructors offer is truly inspiring." And finally, I would like to read. I've had the great fortune of being involved with the Forest Refuge. I actually was the design manager on its creation. I worked with Joseph Goldstein on it. And I've spent 1 week a year. I've had, the great fortune of being able to spend a week a year practicing there. And each year, we were talking a little bit in our group about how things come up when you're practicing in stillness. And 1 year, this inspiration came to me. I'm not sure, you know, again, where it came from, but it was inspiring to me, and this was something for my children. I have three boys, I forgot to bring the pictures. I have a brand new grandson who's 10 days old. If anybody wants to see the pictures, I'm happy to show them. I have real pictures and stuff on my phone, if that'll inspire you. But this was what I refer to as a legacy. This is what I wrote to my boys. "If nothing else, treasure that you have received from me and exposure to the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. My father said many times to me that his search was to find peace of mind. I don't know if he did or not, but I have, along with a spiritual journey of insight, loving kindness, wisdom, and compassion. In your wonderful and busy lives of family, children, friends, and work, you might not have the time, but I offer to you that there is no more important endeavor than for you to start and pursue a spiritual path which one is up to you that will bring you peace of mind, true happiness, and liberation from suffering. And may your spiritual journey be a legacy you leave your children, friends, and family. Thank you for listening. So we could sit a few minutes, and we'll, there are a couple announcements. So why don't we sit just a couple minutes, and then there'll be a break.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.